Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
College Ball Show returns. He's Marshall. I'm Chris, and we're here to discuss everything related to college football. Now, obviously, we got to start with some recap from the conference championships weekend, right? We had a couple of close games. Some of the games turned out pretty much how we thought. A couple of them were a little bit more lower scoring. Well, I'm talking you, Big 12. Than maybe we thought. That's still, 39-27. Really tight games, though, a couple of them, no doubt about it. So we're going to get in there. Obviously, the big one that everybody's talking about, well, beyond Oklahoma, Georgia, or Ohio State, especially Oklahoma, Georgia, we're definitely going to get into that, is, of course, Alabama in Georgia. Heck of a game. Definitely had a lot of drama. Really looked like Georgia, I'm not going to say had it in the bag, but they looked good up 28-14, just how the game was going. We had some heroics as far as a comeback. And it's just crazy how, things happen, in sports, in your life, whatever. But for Jalen Hurts to come off the bench and lead a comeback, what were they down, 14? They were down 13-0 in the national title game. So it was pretty crazy. He had a lot going on. So, of course, we're going to recap conference championship weekend. It won't be just that game. We'll talk about a variety of other games. Then we're going to get into a discussion, a banter, maybe just a full-on fight about who should be in. Should Oklahoma have that fourth spot? Some people even say third spot. Georgia should be in the third spot, or Oklahoma. Notre Dame hasn't played anybody. It's all over the place. But Oklahoma got in the national semifinals. Whether you believe in them or not, it's over. It's a wrap. Well, the games aren't over, of course. From a fan perspective from across the country and whatnot, name brand names like Alabama versus Oklahoma does wonders. Notre Dame is also a name brand name going against Clemson, who in the last 5-6 years had made themselves in to a name brand name. So there you go. I mean, it's set. Obviously, we're going to, kind of preview some of the other marquee bowl matchups, or maybe some flying under the radar. It's not something that we're going to break down all the games. Just so you know. We're going to definitely get into it. We'll talk about some other news out there. The Heisman, there's three people up for the Heisman Trophy. So we're going to talk about the finalists. We'll talk about, here's an interesting one that we'll get to later. The head coach at USC keeps his job. And also a legendary coach on the hardcore level, I guess you could say. Maybe your casual, fan doesn't know about Bill Schneider, but we'll talk a little bit about him and his recent retirement. I just saw it actually about 15 minutes before I got on. We're going to talk about a variety of stuff, no doubt about it. But if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, it streams live right here, blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoveradio. It streams live It archives. It's basically the headquarters. So the College Ball Show, which consists of college football from August to January and turns into college basketball and goes to the NBA playoffs and whatnot, that show's under the Rope a Dope Radio podcast. So you can listen to it here on Block Talk. You can listen to it on iTunes, Player FM, Spricker, Stitcher, TuneIn, a lot of different outlets, that's for sure. Another platform that we're part of is the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. Okay, they're available everywhere. Got a good Spricker app as well. You can also stream the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network and the College Ball Show under Spotify. If you're into, if you got Spotify as your subscription for the month, you stream music, stream other pods there. Check it out at Spotify. Otherwise, iHeartRadio as well. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. They got a great sponsor over there, mybookie.ag. So head on over to thegruelingtruth.net, read an article, listen to a podcast. While you're at it, place a bet. It'll link you right to mybookie.ag. I'm going to go ahead and bring in Marshall, my co-host, into the fold. What's going on, Marshall? How are you doing on this fine evening?
I can't complain too much. I am 34, so a year older. But
happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate the Facebook post. I think I've posted about two times in the past year. I'm so scared as a teacher to pretty much post about anything besides maybe saying hi to a friend. But I got a nice early birthday present of the Cowboys beating the Saints on Thursday night. So that was kind of a nice little
deal.
And this weekend wasn't too bad. We had a basketball tournament, so I was pretty worn out Saturday. So I kind of had a few drinks, took a couple of naps, but I was able to watch a good majority of, I would say, a pretty decent Saturday. It wasn't a 10 out of 10, but as you mentioned, Texas-Oklahoma was a pretty entertaining game. Alabama-Georgia obviously was a fun-as-hell game. There were a lot of games where, I would say, Chris, a lot of people watched from the betting standpoint of over-under season ticket wins. With the weather we had going on this year, there was probably 8 or 9 games this past weekend that were simply makeup games, which had nothing at all to do with conference championships or anything. But if you had bet, like, for example, I don't know, Iowa State played this weekend, and if they were maybe a win short of their win-loss total this year, they got the win, that can kind of become a factor. Because, you know, you always hear with people who bet season win totals, a lot of times sport books will cancel the bet no matter what if a game is canceled. So I think maybe there were probably some diehards watching Iowa State or Marshall or a couple of random teams playing this weekend. And I say that because I love gambling too. Speaking of gambling, I did kind of take one to the chin to correlate your boxing love for my bad gambling bet. When I was watching the Georgia-Alabama game, to start off there, it was 7-0 in the first quarter. And I was like, man, Alabama's defense is ready to play. Georgia's quarterback has never really been that impressive in big games because he can't have a good arm. And I think I bet under 56, which did not hit because Georgia's quarterback had a hell of a game. And as you mentioned, you know who came back and decided to play some football? I mean, as you said, it is a role reversal soap opera of many sorts. And, you know, Saban's never really an emotional guy. I don't think he put on a show either, but he was choked up.
Oh, you mean tears.
After that game and
you mean tears, because he's a very emotional guy. You're talking about showing his tears.
Yeah.
He's more emotional. Every other week, he's like, you guys think we suck. Maybe I should just quit.
Okay, he's normally not that emotional when it comes to winning a game and gloating about a player. I should say that. Is that a fair statement?
Or just showing, you know, tears and whatnot. Yeah, I was just giving you a crap. Because as we know,
sure,
that dude's
And that's fair. But normally, if you were to ask a regular college football fan, you know, describe Saban, a grumpy guy that always saying, well, we never do enough for you. But to hear him get choked up about Jalen Hurts, I mean, there's so many angles in this game to dissect, so I'll go one by one. First off, from a Saban standpoint, when in that game started, and Tua had a little bit of a knee buckle there and an ankle injury, I was not quite sure from a coaching standpoint why he kept Tua in the game. Now, I get you're competitive and you want to win, but Alabama had to know, even if they had lost that game, they were automatically in the playoffs. I don't see how mathematically, even if Bama had lost, how you could have said, you know what, Bama?
Unless you get your ass.
True, which I don't think was going to happen. So I was a little concerned.
Right, but you can't mid coaching go, you know, we're in anyway, let's just switch the quarterback. You know what I mean? I don't know if it's that easy, what you're saying, but go ahead.
And I guess it's just from the way he was limping. It's like, dude, you do have a backup who has some, you know, groundwork under his belt. So I was a little bit surprised with him keeping Tua in. You know, I do think as long as
he has been limping the last month, though, too.
The last month
he's been limping.
And then he took that awful cleat to the ankle, which obviously was probably a different type of injury than his team and then his knee.
Yeah.
But, you know, so he was pretty rugged. But, you know, so if he eventually does go out in what was a very fun up-and-down football game, and Jalen Hurts comes in and acts like he just shook the rust off like it was nothing. So, yeah, to start off the game, I'd say the offense in the first half was pretty slow. And, you know, and then to give
– Hold on.
In
the first half, it was slow. It was 21-14. That's a high-scoring game for that.
The first quarter. When I was thinking it was going to be a competitive defensive matchup, and I was massively wrong. But to give Georgia's quarterback firm credit, a kid that normally gets a bad rap because Georgia is an offensive running back type of team, he actually put together a hell of a nice game. I don't know when the last time that Fromm for Georgia actually made legit passes against a legit defense consistently throughout a whole game. So you had so many different quarterback angles that were going on. So going into the game, as you mentioned, Georgia gets up 28-14. Bama's defense is struggling. Chris, they probably didn't think that Fromm was going to tear them up through the air. I mean, Georgia's known for running the ball, that we know. But Fromm had about as good of a game as he could have through the air passing. They're up 28-14. They're probably feeling pretty damn good because Georgia knew coming into the game they had to win this matchup to make it to the Final Four, at least in my opinion they did. And then I got a few more points, but I'll kind of let you go. But I guess just the basics of the Tua injury, how Saban felt, Fromm having a hell of a game, over some of your bullet points, and I'll kind of wrap up with a few more of mine because I have a lot, but I don't want to go on forever.
Well, as far as the actual game itself, you know, not necessarily just key points or whatever. I don't have seven different things written down to touch upon, but at 21-7, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, Georgia comes out and is playing pretty good defense. Both sides are, like you said, there was an interception early. They go down on a pretty nice drive, score, and then Alabama came right back. And then they scored twice. And they scored, and then it was a three and out. In fact, I think they didn't even gain a yard as far as the full possession goes. It was a negative one. And then they score again. I'm like, wow, this is going to be big. And then Bama comes right back and not evens it out, but gets it to 21-14. And I thought, okay, you know, that was fun. I remember Georgia being up several years ago on LSU at the half. LSU, you know, pretty much took it from there. I thought, okay, you know, it'll probably change, you know. And then to have another three and out, and it's negative 10. I'm looking at it right now with with 1 minute, burnt the clock. They go down with three plays in a minute and score. It's 28-14. And the next possession, Marshall, three plays, 4 yards, buck 26. And then they had another drive. Now, they missed a field goal there. That was key. But once Bama got the ball back and they threw the pick, I'm thinking, oh, boy. And we got to say it before any kind of cleat was in his leg or in his ankle or anything like that. He'd been showing the limp for at least a month. on and off all season.
Oh,
technically,
sure.
But he only threw the ball, what was it, three times in the fourth quarter this whole year? But he was 10 of 26 with .164, and one of the picks is just like downright bad. So he was just playing bad. And it really had a reminiscent, in a sense, of what was going on in that 13-0. So I thought, although they didn't make the decision to go to him, they were forced to go to him. I guess that's where
sure.
it differs last year, right? Because they came out
yes.
of half,
yes.
you know, with – I mean, he still threw that pick. But the defense rose up, got a three and out, and boom, four play, touchdown. Defense held them two more times, had that 60. I mean, this was a quintessential drive here. 16 plays, 80 yards, chewed up 7 minutes, scored a touchdown, tied it, and then got them to turn it over on downs. So the whole team came up. Jalen Hurts came to save the day, but the defense finally stood up and then obviously made pretty quick work. Five plays, you know, 52 yards, 2 minutes, 35-28. And it seemed like every play the CBS guy was just like adding the layers to Jalen Hurts coming back and all that. So it was
sure.
It was drama filled, just like the heavyweight fight where Tyson Fury, you know, looking like he's dead on the canvas, literally concussion. And all of a sudden he plays the Undertaker in a much calmer fashion because literally Fury looked like he was out on the canvas. And much, you know, less drama than that, obviously. But Bama comes back from two scores, gets the job done, even though, you know, time of possession, 35-40, two turnovers to none. Even though it was stacked against them, it's almost like they needed this game. And now, is it coasting from here? Obviously, we're going to find out. And you know, we're going to find out about Tua as well. Is he going to be okay? How deep and you know, was that dig into from his own offensive lineman, by the way, digging into his ankle, like you said, that looked like it hurt really bad with all that weight from a big guy like that. And then you're also getting the weight from a guy pushing him towards you. You know what I mean? So I wonder, but yeah, man, that was something that Bama, even if they lost, I think you're right, especially in this situation, how this game played out. If they would have lost in overtime or just came up short, I still think they would have been in. Obviously, that would have added even more layers to this thing, which we are going to – I know we've been, you know, kind of spent a lot of time on this game, but this is the big game. We are going to talk Oklahoma, Georgia, and Ohio State like that. But, you know, for Hurts to come in and – you know, 7 of 9 through the air with a touch, but also the big runs he had that were really, really crucial. You know, it was huge. And then you also got to look on the other side, and I'm sure some of the things you got jotted down there, you know, are going to be what, you know, you're going to talk about. And there were a couple when you're up 28-14, you know, should you win that game at that time? Do you feel bad for Georgia? Cause you go, well, dude, you're up by two touchdowns. You got to finish it to get in, that type of thing. We'll obviously layer that, but there were some moments that made you scratch your head on the Georgia side. At Kirby Smart. Wouldn't you say?
Oh, for sure. That's my last.
Look at the segue.
Point. Oh.
I laid that shit on the platter for you. Cause I knew it was coming.
Oh, yeah, that is called chemistry of working together for a long time. What in God's name was he thinking? You have a bowl berth on the line. Okay, and I get that trick plays are sometimes needed in college football. But there's 3.5 minutes left. Your defense has been respectable for the most part in the game. And you try a fake punt on 4th and 11, and it wasn't as bad as the New England Patriot Colt thing where the guy lined up under center with like 3 people in front of him, but you saw Bam as they show on the replay.
They were
Bam was in
their
base
defense.
They
had their defense in 4th and 11. It's 11 yards, dude. What the?
Yeah, and they knew.
I mean, if you got Randall Cunningham, If you got Randall Cunningham back there, sure, because he can punt. The guy has a 91-yard punt in the history when he was in the NFL.
Sure.
But what the hell was going on? Then you randomly put the guy who's the backup quick, running quarterback in, just giving away the play?
It would be incredibly frustrating as a Georgia fan. And in sports, a lot of times fans can be irrational and blame the coach for shit that doesn't make sense. But for that one,
sure.
If I was a Georgia fan, I would just been like, dude, what were you thinking? And also, I don't know, I guess I remember exactly, but if Georgia had a timeout there, I believe they did. I guess I'd have to recheck. But why would you not see a red flag? Why would you not see a red flag jump off and be like, Bama's defense is not, they're in a nickel or something. Like, maybe
right.
We should rethink this idea.
You could take a penalty. You just back it up a little bit.
Yeah.
Even if you don't have a timeout.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, exactly. Because you see so many times where coaches in college football run down the sidelines to the 10-yard line just because they're not happy with, like, a 1st-and-10 play call in the red zone. But how is your mind not going off of, like, dude, we have a potential final berth on the line to make the college football playoff. This fake punt does not look good. Maybe we should audible or do – I mean, it's had to be one of these stupidest calls. I'm a guy on this podcast. So if you listen to us, I'm normally a guy that's 50-50 with a coach going for it, you know, to avoid overtime, going for the win the last second. I don't mind a coach that's a gambler. But it blows me. I'm happy I'm not a Georgia fan because that play would have driven me nuts. And as the play was made, it just looked like Bama's like, really, that's what you got? Okay, well, we're going to stop it. And now instead of driving 50 yards to win a national title berth for us or a spot, you know, instead of driving 85 to 90, against, again, a decent defense, you're giving us half a field. And just, I don't know, Chris, that call just made me shake my head a lot. My rant, it's over. But, man, it was a stupid, stupid play call. And Bama's like, dude, okay, we're ready for you. What do you got? I just don't
seriously
get it.
It's 11 yards, too. You put in the guy who everybody's going to know. When he's in the game, he's running the ball on offense. Now you put him on a punt. Maybe he's there all the time and we don't know it. Maybe. But is that the guy you're really going to have blocking right there? I doubt it. Maybe I'm wrong. I am wrong. Maybe they've done it all year and they got the backup running quarterback in there. It could be. But either way, you just don't do it when they're lined up for it. They're lined up for it. They got their defense in, like you said. The defense can stop you straight up, let alone that type of shit. It's, he could have got hurt, the guy. That's how bad of a play it was.
Yeah. But, and lastly, and I'll be, we have break this out a lot, but it was a big game. Hurts looks like he has put in the mindset of, I'm still a valuable person to this team. And has stayed in game shape form. Because it is hard to basically – I mean, I guess he had been used in games where there were blowouts, but he had not been put in a moment like that for over a year.
Yeah.
So it was rewarding from
That's
him for a guy
easy.
That – no, for a guy that, you know, just took it on the chin because he was not as good of a player. He was basically benched due to skill, but you never heard him complain, never complained about not being redshirted or being allowed to transfer. He kept the team – concept first about as much as an athlete humanly can for a guy who's been as good as him. So that was a good reward for, you know, just staying with the team concept because you don't see that all the days now in sports, my friend.
Well, and let's rephrase that. He wasn't benched because of skill. He won a lot of games with what they recruited his skill with. Another quarterback had better skills than him passing and he can run. It's not that he's not skilled, because in college, you get
recruited,
sit in the pocket.
That's what I meant to say. Yeah, you said it better. Yes, you're right.
But man.
Now, speaking of.
That's crazy. And I saw Georgia fans going, Mark Richt, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I even hacked you. And I'm sorry, Mark. We were wrong. We got Kirby Smart, too. Kirby's shitty, too. It's like, guys, come on. Don't jump off Kirby just yet. Jesus Christ. But it is true, though. It's a very, like, really, dude? I think you're a great coach, Kirby Smart, but wow, dude. You're overthinking yourself there, dude. Maybe he believes his own hype. I don't know.
And speaking of skill, a game that we expected to showcase some more offensive skill, Oklahoma, Texas. And as you said, points were scored, but the over-under was 85.
Right.
I mean, Oklahoma's personal bet total for as a team was over under 41. So Vegas was like, okay, they're going to drop some points. And they did, but they were not crazy explosive. And we should expect
right.
it because Texas theoretically played good defense against them at the game I went to at the state fair for about three quarters-ish. And then Oklahoma, when I left the stadium, scored like 21 points in like what seemed like 5 minutes. All of a sudden, they were going. So props to the defense a little bit because it was a more competitive game from that standpoint. And it's going to be weird to say this, but I got to give some props to Oklahoma's defense because for all the crap they've taken this year, they have at least been an opportunistic defensive team. They made enough plays against West Virginia to help that game win. They ran back a conversion for a touchdown to help beat A&M.
Plays when you keep getting the ball going against you. When Oklahoma offense, you get the ball back so many times, you're bound to make some plays. But I hear you. In this game, they definitely did, especially down the stretch.
Yes, they had the crucial stop against Oklahoma State last play of the game. They had the 2-point run back to help beat Texas Tech. You know, even last year against Georgia. I remember last year against Georgia, when they had the scoop and the score in the fourth quarter, I thought the game was over. So
yeah, me too.
They became better from the point when they fired their coach Stoops, and they did enough again against Texas. I will say, Chris, just the kind
that
of
that safety
this,
was
I don't
huge.
Have nearly as many.
That safety
oh,
was
yeah.
huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, opportunistic defense. You know, they could just be a shit defense like UConn. And you go 50 points game and I'm be a turnover opportunist.
Well, dude,
so
come on,
they
are Oklahoma, though. Oklahoma and UConn recruiting wise, let's not go to UConn. I mean, come on. They're a shit defense, dude.
Yeah. My only point left for this one, not nearly the long sheet of Georgia Bama, was I was surprised Texas did not pass the ball as well as I expected them to. The Texas wide receivers owned Oklahoma's DBs that whole game. The coolest name, Little Jordan Humphreys, didn't have that huge game. I was just surprised that, and maybe Oklahoma's secondary had a different game plan after the debacle I witnessed in person, which is possibly true. I don't know the game that close enough with Oklahoma's strategy, but they didn't. The receivers did not make a mockery of it, and Texas had to work harder on their drives. And I was just impressed with the secondary. It wasn't great for Oklahoma, but it was respectable enough to help them win a game. And that was not the case when they played each other about 6 weeks ago, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, they still gave up 349. But, yeah, I hear you. I thought they did a better job stopping the run. They only gave up 88 rushing yards. Tell that to Johnson. He had eight catches and 177 for a touch. He felt pretty good about his day. I hear you. They made just enough plays. And you know, as far as Texas early defensively played pretty good. You know, I was talking last week about how, you know, sometimes it's not necessarily going to be a turnover. It could be just a turnover on downs or in the red zone, force them to kick a field goal. And that's exactly what it was, 7-6 there. And they were up 14-6.
True.
So they did stand up there, no doubt about it. It did, you know, Oklahoma came out at the beginning of the third quarter and got up 27-14. I thought, is this is where, you know, Texas got to show up all of a sudden. And sure enough, they responded by back-to-back touchdown drives, tying it back up. And then it just got back and forth to have that long, long run. I mean, how long was it? 56-yard completion, you know, after the run, and go get all the way down in great, you know, I mean, where are they at the, like, let's see, at the 7 is where they started, the, or at the 8. So they had that long play and then fumbled at the end of it. And you're like, wow, dude, this thing could get really freaking interesting. But there's a key point right then and there when the momentum could have bit them a little bit. Now, sure, Texas had to go the length of the field, of course, but to get that safety right away, get the ball back,
yeah,
have 11 play drive, 65 yards, and score a touchdown, that's where, you know, it was a wrap. And, you know, Ellinger played pretty good. Obviously, Murray had another, you know, superb day, 379, 3 touchdowns. They didn't need him to run as much, but he got a, you know, he still got a couple of runs that they needed badly. And it was just a good game. It was more of a well-played game. It wasn't, that's the thing about, you know, we didn't get to talk about the 74-72 LSU Texas A&M game, but, you know, when the score's like that, and you're, it's a lot different when you're getting into the 50s, 60s, and 70s from both teams if it's overtime, obviously, because, you know, you're lining
yes.
up at the 25, you know, so that's you're within field goal range potentially. Not if you're a Vikings kicker, but potentially you're in field goal range. And so, so, you know, that's a little different. So I was glad that they played some defense in the Big 12 at that moment, because otherwise, just like that West Virginia game, and just like some of these games down the stretch, you're like, dude, everybody's happy. They have this big celebration. The cannons go off, fireworks go off. And then 3 plays later, basically the same play, boom, touchdown. All that celebration, that's over. Now it's a tied game again, or they just went up on you. So it's fun to watch as a
sure.
fan, but only to an extent, because if you're watching it with a handful of people and you're kind of shooting your shit, you kind of look at the TV, you're like, oh, shit, there's a long – that's a 40-yard touchdown run. What the hell was that? You know, so you're like, dude, is anybody going to tackle? You know, so it's a weird – you know, it's a balancing act, and you got to be able to defend something. You know what I mean? And these guys are, it's 5 yards and they're open. You know what I mean? Where you're like, dude, is anybody out there? You know, so that was nice to see. Just to kind of get through a little bit more of this, Ohio State Northwestern was a competitive game for a good chunk of time. Then Ohio State put the pedal to the metal. End up winning 45-24. Central Florida and Memphis, that was the high scoring game. That was the shootout. 56-41, Central Florida ends their season on a high note once again, still undefeated. Drake and ISU was actually closer than I thought, 27-24.
Yeah.
That in-state Iowa, ooh, that was a rough one there. Clemson, you know, took care of Pitt, no problem, 42-10. I think there was – how many completions did the Pitt quarterback have? I can't remember. Let me go look. 4 of 16. 4 for 8 yards. They still managed 192 yards rushing, though. That's kind of crazy. But, yeah, Clemson just walks through. And this game played out as far as the Pac-12. This game played out several years ago. We could have – at least labeled, you know, just how we were talking about the Big 12. The Pac-12 was kind of like that in spots as far as just pure offense, and some teams have
sure.
great
yeah.
defense and some don't. Now it's not as much that way, I'd say, these last couple of years. And I said this one would play out like a Big Ten or SEC, you know, football game, and it sure did. In fact, the defense – scored the touchdown. They both just taking slugs at each other, not getting a lot accomplished offensively. But Washington, you know, they got a little healthier. They got a tight end and a tackle, really good tackle back these last chunk of probably the last month or two. It definitely wasn't in that opening Auburn game, but they get it done, have a 10-3 season. Washington closes the door on you Utah, like I said, with that 66-yard touchdown deflection interception by Byron Murphy. So that was one of those games that just was like, okay, well, what's going to happen? And 3-3, you know, in the third quarter, and near the end, I think it was the end of the third quarter is when Washington pulled ahead, and that's exactly what happened. So I guess not a ton to talk about there, but that was a good – that was go ahead.
I will give Washington some credit because throughout most of the year, I basically said they're an overrated garbage team that was expected to have a phenomenal season. Now, look at their win-loss record. It was respectable. But they never had many blowout games this year. They never performed quite as well as their ranking showed, in my opinion. But – and I'm happy I didn't bet against them because I could have lost a lot of money because I would have expected Washington State to beat them. Now, you could say – with Washington State's offense in a blizzard, is it mightily effective? Yes. If Washington State plays Washington at home in a normal condition, do they win the game? I would say their probability increases, played in snow. Obviously, that does hurt the running
game. Awesome,
but props
to
Washington.
That in the Fresno Boise was awesome.
Yeah.
That was so fun to watch.
Props to them for winning that game. And then again, Utah has a coach who – almost never loses a bowl. His bowl record, Whitham, is like 14-1. He's good off buys. He's a very good game playing coach. Utah is always a tough, pesky team to play, and they beat Utah too. So it was a nice end of the year for a team that had a very, I guess you would say, nonchalant season. Because after the Auburn game, you didn't quite hear about him as much because their play was not as good. So the way they finished, I could easily see Washington beating Ohio State to finish off their bowl game. We're not sure if maybe Meyer's going to coach. Well, you know, with his health conditions, who knows, that they say it keeps getting worse. I could easily see them carrying the momentum from having a tough start to the year. They finished on a very strong note, which, like I said, I would not have predicted they would have beat both those teams, let alone one of them.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put it. And that Mountain West championship game, I was reading the conference thing and it just said football in there. I figure it's a football game. That was a good game too. Pretty low scoring, but that's not a big surprise. If you look at how the other games turned out, I would have thought it'd be a little high scoring, maybe one team in the 20s or getting into the 30s, but it was 7-7 for quite some time. Fresno was able to get just a little bit of a lead. You know, they kind of did the double dip where they got something near the end of the second quarter, and then coming out, they went out and had a decent drive and scored to get up 13-7. You know, Boise State, they responded. 50-yard drive, 4 minutes, but they missed the field goal, and it just started clicking right there, like, uh-oh, Boise State kicker missing. It brings me back to Vegas, but they tied it up later. Probably mid, I'd say, 13-13, and then it just was like back and forth. Defense showed up. There'd be a fumble here, fumble there. You know, ended up going the distance, going to overtime, and you know, the field goal wasn't enough for Boise State, who was up just, you know, for a moment at 16-13, but Fresno ended up getting it done and making up for what happened in the last week of the season. So it's, or a couple of weeks, I should say. And it's happened like that, I think, three separate times now in that conference where someone beat someone, whether it's a week or I think it was last year, Fresno beat him during the year on the last game. They turned right around, whereas this was 2 or 3 weeks ago. But Fresno lost a game they were leading and probably should have won. And Boise State came back. Well, it's just the opposite here. So they came back, and when it counted, they ended up getting it done. So the last three or four weeks of the season, there was always a good game, a good matchup in that conference as they came down the stretch. Are there any other things you want to talk about from championship week before we get into some of this news? And obviously, give our takes on Oklahoma, Georgia, or Ohio State?
Our Raging Cajuns played us proud. They did not beat App State, but that was a close competitive game. And I would love to open up our show with the Raging Cajun Fight song. But they lost to App State, but it was a competitive matchup. And I'm proud of our Raging Cajuns. I can't wait to see how they play in their bowl game. Those boys are our adopted team, and they had a pretty damn good season. They still got one game left, so props to them.
Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. Okay, so
back to serious debate for football.
Yeah, right. The big debate, you know, obviously out there is a two loss. I mean, most people, because of the Ohio State, it kind of feels like TCU to me. It's the Ohio State, you know, TCU from a couple years back, I should preference. But, you know, Ohio State to me took an L and got beat by a I'm not going to say some shitty team or anything like that, because, you know, Purdue's a pretty good team. They're on the up and up, whatever. But they got, you know, I mean, what was the damn score? 49-20. So they got beat up. They got beat up in that game. So, to me, you can kind of push them aside. But then it comes down to Oklahoma and Georgia. And both of them have losses to good teams, Texas and LSU. You know, it's tough because when LSU had an extra loss, they were in front of certain teams without that loss. You know, we see this thing happen. Remember Auburn? Auburn was a team with two losses that looked like they were going to be able to get in until they laid an egg and ended up getting beat. You know, this one's interesting. Oklahoma, you know, if you look at their, you know, they had UCLA in the non-conference, who's clearly not up. And when they scheduled it, they probably weren't, it wasn't going to be some marquee game or nothing like that. But when they scheduled it, they were probably a little better, more of an 8 or 9 win type, you know, team. They did have a win against Iowa State at Iowa State. They had some tight games, no doubt about it. They lost very tight, 48-45, to Texas. They beat Texas Tech once again, 51-46, real close. Next week, Oklahoma, 48-47. They even let Kansas put 40 up on them. They let Kansas put 40 up on them, and we're not talking about at the half with the Kansas basketball team. We're talking about the football team, Marshall. And then West Virginia, they barely got by, 59-56. And then they pretty much handled, you know, the stretch. Actually, they didn't handle anybody. The last maybe, I don't know, like 12 minutes of the game or whatever, they ended up, you know, clearing that. They did get a little lead there. So I wouldn't say they have this overly impressive resume. They played some good teams. It's a high-scoring league, no doubt about it. How good is West Virginia sitting at 8-3? I don't know. Are they the same team that when they were, you know, closer to undefeated, where people are looking at them differently? Us, we never really looked at them that high up, besides the quarterback and whatnot, but, you know, we were giving them a fair shake or whatever. Now they just lost. They're coming off a loss, so odds are you're going to go down losing. But it is to Bama. But then again, if you would have just beat Bama in that game you were up, you'd be in for sure. There'd be no even argument. We'd be arguing if Alabama should be in or whatever, or other teams. You know, in the Georgia losses to LSU, they got beat by 20 in that one. No doubt about it. Now, after that, they beat some quality teams. Nothing stands out as just great teams. Kentucky had a really great season for Kentucky. They came down to earth a little bit late, no doubt about it. Well, what are your thoughts here when you're sifting through these resumes? You know, when it comes down to who should get in, I mean – it is a good argument, and we talked about this last year. I'm not sure if we talked about it the year before, but I think we're going to have to get, instead of going right to 8, which I think is a mistake, I think that 5 slot where this next week, well, who do you think should get in? Oklahoma or Georgia? I don't know. Why don't they play? And then the rest, you know, like the number one seed would just get a bye. What are your thoughts on these two, man? Should Oklahoma get in, even though – and then you look at the team itself. Oklahoma is a one-sided team. Georgia's not. Georgia can run the ball. So do you match them up? Sometimes that's fair. Sometimes that's not. Because as we know, even in bowl season, when people like to count up each conference and see how they did, you got to look at the matchups. How many favorites? How many non-favorites? The Big Ten tends to, the top five teams in the Big Ten tend to get sometimes overmatched just because of the name recognition. So I don't know, man. Where do you sit on this? Because I think everybody debating Georgia, Oklahoma, I think there's a good case for both of them, to be honest with you, because is West Virginia and Texas, like Texas and LSU, that's a good game, especially midseason. You know, I don't know, man. Where do you sit on this? You kind of already told us, but tell us why.
Okay. I do think that there is public pressure. I know that they'll never say it, but whether it's like same thing for March Madness, like whatever decisions made and the negative feedback the committee gets, I think that gets factored into next year's decision subconsciously, just because it kind of has to, because they don't want to hear the same shit again. So I do think part of it could be the fact that, oh, God, we're going to put another two-loss SEC team in the picture. Now, again, I don't know, have the exact facts, but
another?
There's been a reputation.
Another one?
But there's been the idea of that SEC, or I should say, you're going to put in a
two-loss SEC team.
There's never
been a two-loss
team
that's made it, though. Let's clarify that.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry, yeah. So I think that the public perception of, well, I misphrased that. You're going to put in a two-loss SEC team. I do think there could be some grief against that. Now, is that fair or not? I don't know. But public perception of always favoring the SEC in a way because it is the best conference, I think possibly played a factor. Another thing I think that was a factor was the fact that going into the weekend, Oklahoma was sitting in the best spot. You know, Oklahoma and Ohio State won. I was having this conversation with people at the bar. If to think that Ohio State could have jumped Oklahoma, let's say Georgia had lost a little more convincingly. Okay, I think with the committee also, I don't think they're in a habit of changing stuff with how it's set going into the final weekend, barring something crazy. Oklahoma and Ohio State both had, I would say, decent convincing wins against opponents who are relatively similar. You could say Northwestern is a slightly weaker opponent than Texas, but it wouldn't be like an obliteration. So I think the fact that those games were kind of the same, well, again, was the reason that you're not going to switch them. Because I think there's been times before where they've switched teams where you and I come on a podcast and like, oh, well, so-and-so's in. And then the night of the selections, you're like, well, so-and-so hopped that team. It's like, well, how the hell did that happen? So I think this year, Chris, was just so much to do with the politics of how the picking process goes than anything. Because I think the resume comparisons you make are pretty fair. Georgia's bad loss was at LSU. Texas's bad loss at neutral site against, you know, or Oklahoma's was neutral site against Bulls. So I guess you could say Georgia's loss was a little worse because I think many people going to that game thought they were going to roll LSU and LSU kicked their ass. I think the Georgia-Oklahoma game was a little more of a close competitive matchup. I mean, for the best win category, I would say Oklahoma's best win was going to West Virginia, which is a tough place to play. Georgia's best win is who's Georgia's best win on the year? I mean, beating Florida or beating Kentucky, who had a good year, but, you know, it's not something to brag about. So I think from the best
it's
win
their
category.
It's their best loss, I think, is really what you got to look at. You know what I mean? They both got quality losses. I'd probably say LSU is a better team this year in the regular season than Texas. But, you know, Alabama, I mean, it's tough.
So, yeah,
plus,
I just think
we
just
had two of them in last year, and what did we end up with? Two SEC teams in the finals. They were both in, right? Georgia and Alabama were both in.
Yep.
They played Clemson and Oklahoma.
Exactly.
What happened? You know what I mean? So when we say, oh, another team, yeah, but that team won the first round and damn near beat them in the
–
it took overtime. So, but then again, it's not last year. These aren't last year's teams. And that plays a part, too. So
yeah, you're right. I just think that they get so much crap for every decision they make. So I do think that all in all, had a factor of, well, God, if we let another SEC team in or all that crap. I mean, who knows? Who knows what the committee truly decided? But I truly do think that the moving people around, because I forget what year it was, but I remember one time you and I did a show, and we're like, how the hell did they jump them? Because the week before, they weren't that, you know. I do think that has become an issue per se. I think it was Ohio State one year where they jumped in. It's like, dude, a week ago the committee said, hey, you know, things are going to go how they are, and every team wins, and the teams stay the same.
And that
Ohio State surpassed someone.
Team won the championship.
True.
2013.
And I'm not saying it was approved. You know, you're right, Chris. The best damn team won, which is fair. But I think that maybe caused the committee to be like, oh, man, that was – kind of a hard one to explain.
Sure.
So that's the best answers I got. I think it was more so politics of the committee corresponding or committee group than actual play on the field. Because you're right, the Georgia Oklahoma resume, I mean, close. And if those teams play in a neutral field, I'm guessing Georgia's favored by two, because the point spread of Oklahoma and Georgia, Bama is 2 points higher. Bama's a 2 point heavier favorite against Oklahoma than they were versus Georgia. So, yeah, that's all I got, my friend. But yeah, the Ohio State angle, I just think, again, you did not do enough to surpass them. And, again, the ranking situation and the Purdue loss in that situation is a pedigree lower than the loss to Texas.
Sure. Sounds it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I'm okay with Oklahoma, but I'll say this: I think Georgia's a better team than Oklahoma. I'll say that.
I think if they played, if I had to bet at a neutral site, I'd probably bet Georgia. Well, let me ask you this then.
So what's stopping you from doing it? Just that second loss?
I think I do think the second loss is the hammer. And
the fact,
you know,
they don't have a marquee win, although Oklahoma, what's their marquee win again? Tell me. Well, what's their marquee win again? Beating Texas, who beat them? That's their best win?
No, I'd say Oklahoma's best win is going to West Virginia.
Okay. And then what's West Virginia's best win? Texas? So, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Go ahead. You were going to say something else, though.
Yeah. But I would think a more debatable point for me is, okay, so we had Oklahoma in. We'll stick with that. I'll stick with my guns there. Should I think Oklahoma should? I mean, them and Georgia's one thing, but I think Oklahoma should have been the 3 seed. I actually thought they were going to get bumped up at 3. Notre Dame would have been playing Bama as the 4.
So you're gonna allow a loss and be the one loss be the difference, but then now you're not gonna put that in the equation with Notre Dame, because remember they have one more loss.
True, but okay, but if we're comparing resumes in Notre Dame, and again, Notre Dame did not have a conference championship game to bump up resumes, which they've always said is a big point. Did Notre Dame's schedule this year, in your opinion, deserve to have them as a 3?
Is Michigan the best win?
I'd have to say Michigan was their best win.
Okay,
they had a respectable schedule, but
Okay, I mean, but Michigan's their best win. That's what I'm saying. They didn't lose, and Michigan's their best win. Is Michigan just as good as West Virginia and Texas?
Yeah.
Like face value?
Yeah.
What kind of season they have?
No, you're
okay.
Yeah,
so
I'd say you're right.
Now you just tweaked it. You now the loss doesn't matter. Well, why doesn't the Georgia loss then? If you just admitted to me that Georgia could beat Oklahoma, but they got that extra loss, then why the hell, you know what I mean? So it means something when it means something?
No, but I think, and you know, maybe this is because of the reason the Big 12 got a Big 12 title game was because of the fact that a conference championship does a little more to benefit your resume. That was my, I guess I should have pressed that. That was my main angle of maybe them eventually avenging their loss and winning the Big 12 title could have been enough to bump them up, since Notre Dame obviously does not ever play in a conference title game. I thought that angle potentially could have been enough for them to surpass Notre Dame.
Okay. They had a lot of tight games, though, Oklahoma, if you look at it. I mean, it's not like they were dominant.
That was just like a hot, you know, a sports bar debate take. But, you know,
I mean,
Syracuse
and West Virginia right now, that's a good-ass game. That's a good game. Northwestern's a decent opponent.
True.
Especially on the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's fine.
Okay.
You know, I think it's fine right there. But let's move on from this because there's nothing we can do about it.
Sounds good.
First of all, Bill Schneider from Kansas State, who has done a hell of a job on the, I guess you could put a hardcore level of college football, as far as people knowing him and whatnot. But he retires after so many years. And I remember him in each decade, you know. But I really think what he did like late 90s, mid to late 90s was impressive. And then this last, you know, about 5 to 7 year run, sure, the last couple of years. But if you look at about a 5-year stretch where you knew what kind of team you were going to get out of them, definitely one of the higher statue of coaches in the history. On it matters what levels you're looking at, but he's a pretty damn good coach overall. And also, the Heisman candidates came out: Tua, Murray, and Haskins. And thank God they got Haskins, because by the way. And here we go with another Ohio State quarterback getting not the proper praise all year long. And that's why I kept going back to his stats. And I know it has to do with Urban Meyer. I mean, I got a co-host right here that hates Urban Meyer. A lot of people hate Urban Meyer. So I get it. But this guy just went for 41 touchdowns. He beat Drew Brees in touchdowns in a single season. And by the way, the guy who was starting before him has the third most and fourth most, 35 and 34, back to 2 years in there, by the way, 2014, 2017 for JT Barrett, right behind Drew Brees. And then he also set the passing record all time. So let's get that out there. He needed to be there, and I'm not saying people shitted on him. They just undervalued him because of his coach, and his defense for a while was playing way under their potential. So that obviously hurt him too. But that's not his fault. I mean, that has nothing to do with him. You put him in the Alabama situation, that's going to be pretty good for Haskins, isn't it? So, with the defense and the full, you know, more of a complete team this year anyway.
Sure.
But I'm glad those three made it. And also, USC, the man in charge, keeps his job. I know that was something his third or fourth year? He did win, didn't they win the Pac-12 last year? Pac-12 last year. So you're willing to, after 3 years, which only gets you to, like, because your first year is not really a recruiting year, your first year. That's not your squad. So your second year is really – so he's got guys that he actually recruited heading into their sophomore and junior years is what I'm trying to tell you. Are you still wanting to you thought that they should have canned them, or are you willing to give them another year or two to let this thing play out? Obviously, it doesn't matter because they're keeping them, but I'm saying as far as you, because I know you weren't happy with them this year, and obviously, yeah, I understand why.
Yeah, I'm very surprised he was brought back. I do think that, I mean, my opinions aside, which I'll get to quickly, USC didn't go to a bowl game this year. This is a school that, I mean, I grew up in Alaska.
First time since
high school. I never really had a team growing up in Alaska. I'm super football. And so I kind of fell in love with the Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart times against the Vince Young layout. That's kind of when I liked USC. And they've always had the offensive talent. Obviously, they've gone through a lot of shit with the Reggie Bush and the Lane Kid. I mean, there's been stories. But they've always gone to a bowl. They've always had a talented team that can get you at least 6 wins. Normally, shit, a lot of times they're ranked top 10 in the country, and they may fall down, but, I mean, there's something there. And you don't go to a bowl game this year. They finished the year 1-4. He's 1-14 as an underdog head coach. I just what kind of backdoor deal does he have going on to keep himself a job? I mean, USC is a –
Well, he won the Pac-12 last year. Maybe that's what's keeping him there. I'm just saying.
And his first year, he was blessed with the grace of Sam Darnold in an incredible Rose Bowl game. But looking back, it's looking like Sam Darnold, in my opinion, did a lot for him. Because last year in that bowl game against Ohio State, that was an obliteration of an embarrassment for the team. It wasn't even a game. Darnold, I remember people watching that game saying Darnold's stock is dropping like minute by minute. Well, I've never liked T. Martin, who they did fire their OC, but I don't see what he has done to deserve to keep his job there. He didn't go to a damn bowl game, and you can never – and you can never, ever win as a dog besides once in your career. If you are a coach with that amount of talent, you should have a better win-loss record than 1-14 when you are a dog. Because even though USC is a dog in some teams, the athletic skills normally is not much of a difference. And if it's not athletic skills normally, it's either coaching or the players are very young. Well, I guess I don't like giving them many excuses. And I would say the same thing for, like, SEC fan bases, you know, I think that we're maybe not up to that par, but we're not much further behind Georgia, Auburn, or we're not quite the pedigree, but shit, we used to be. The USC used to be kind of the SEC.
You just
type
won the
of school
Pac-12
on the West
last
Coast.
Year, though. Does that mean nothing? Does that mean? I mean, isn't that part of what a coach does is build the foundation? Now, I don't know if that two-year window was with guys that were veteran guys and he just made them better, and
true,
now he's had to recoup and he's got a young team. I don't know. I don't know that. I know that about Miami. I know that about Minnesota. I don't know about that USC. So if that's the case, then I'd hang on to him. But I can understand having a bad year. Just give your last thoughts on here. We got to start wrapping this puppy up here.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fine. I just think not going to a bowl game is unacceptable. That'd be my final point. And to finish year 1-4 and miss a bowl, I think USC should be a higher standard. But speaking of this, though, where there's
like winning the Pac-12,
on a different,
like a higher standard, like winning
where
the
there's promise is the
right
fact that Cliff Kingsbury, who was removed from Texas Tech, and that dude did a do a great job there, but
about
but
time
he,
they got
he
him
did,
out.
I would say,
you know, that team that did get
he did
second in the country, right? You know that under a different coach, they got all the way to the second in the country, right? You know that. You remember that, right? Texas Tech. Remember that
well,
game?
They've now had
remember
back
that game,
to back by the two smartest. They've had the two smartest offensive minds in back to back head coaches in the country. Now both are gone. So. And I know he
yeah,
tried
well,
to get defense.
Yeah, well, one of them got him
better.
Got him up to the higher rankings. One of them didn't. Obviously.
True. Agreed. No, and I'm not saying Cliff Kingsbury was an A-plus coach, but I think he did a respectable job at Texas Tech for the situation there. But with that being said, he's been highly recruited by USC or the Rams. So I think there could be an L.A. house coming quickly for Cliff Kingsbury. And I think when Sean McVay wants you, that goes to show how highly respected his offensive mind is. I think so. I'm hoping he goes to USC, but man, if McVay and Cliff Kingsbury, that could be that LA Rams mastermind offense is going to be even freaking scarier if those guys team up together. I think that'd be a good situation for him.
Well, and
so
if he
maybe
can do what he does in the pros too, you know, that's got to
sure.
be at least brought up. You don't just run into
true.
Yeah, I mean, how'd Spurrier's go? How'd his run go?
Yeah.
When he was, you know, putting it on people
those,
preseason.
True. I just think those two combined have potential to be a scary good team. So that was just kind of for a different coach show. And I don't know why the hell Carolina took Mac.
They're doing pretty good
forever,
right now on
get.
Offense, though, you know, the Rams.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know if they need him.
And Gurley keeps.
I'm not sure if they need him. I don't know why that guy would get banned.
He keeps falling down the 1 yard line to piss off all the fantasy people. But that's all
so,
I got for Coach Newsby. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just looking at some of these games that are a little bit more under the radar. I like Fresno State and Arizona State. I've been kind of watching from afar both of them. I think that's and that's actually the one that kicks it off. And then it kind of goes to the, you know, my Gophers ended up beating Wisconsin, got to the Quick Lane Bowl in the Ford Field, going against Georgia Tech. Obviously, I'll have some personal interest there. The New Era Pinstripe Bowl in Yankee Stadium. That's where Miami and Wisconsin are playing back-to-back years. That matchup they love about 4 or 5 years ago, they did the same one, too. It was in a different bowl game, but the same matchup. They really like that matchup.
You do know the bad news for your Gophers, all right? That is Paul Johnson, Georgia Tech. That's his last game as head coach. That is an angle that will not be beneficial to your Gophers. There's that extra win one for the Gipper angle, and unfortunately, Paul Johnson, he said, I need a break from coaching. So you're going to get every single tool in the shed thrown at you in that game, and it's against a triple option. So I'll be pulling for you.
I'm not worried about that. I'm more worried about 15 practices that the youngest team in the country is going to get. I could care less if we win that game. But good call. I like the note.
Fair enough.
I like the stat. Yeah. I like the stat. I'm not trying to bite your finger there. But I'm not worried about all that. But you're right. That's
true.
They probably win one for the Giffer. That's for sure. They definitely probably will. And, you know, the defense hadn't stacked up well against rushing teams this year, so I'm not thinking they're going to win, actually. But now that you gave me that extra layer, I'll probably bet against them. And then Purdue-Auburn could be interesting. We just talked about that, Syracuse or West Virginia. Well, we're going to get a look at that. Iowa State-Washington State, that's kind of interesting. Another matchup they do a whole lot, this is the Peach Bowl, Florida and Michigan. That is just a rating revenue at the gate thing that they do. That's just how it happens. Cotton Bowl this year, obviously. That's one of the semifinals, Clemson-Notre Dame. The Orange Bowl, Alabama-Oklahoma. And that is on the Saturday before the New Year's stuff. So it's on a normal Saturday. Whereas, you know, Monday, and that hooks up the NFL too, because then they could just go on Sunday. And December, New Year's Eve, that's actually Monday. So that kind of works out nicely for that, I think. Another game, well, Northwestern Utah, that actually for the hardcore fan base, that could be good. Could be really good. Kentucky Penn State has my interest. Central Florida and LSU. You know that Auburn game last year, that this could be interesting. Obviously, you know, sucks that Central Florida doesn't have their quarterback. Washington and Ohio State, another good game. And then Georgia against Texas, which is a very big game if you look at it in the context of our discussion about who should be in.
Also, props to UAB. They won their conference. A team that had football, had a ban for 2 years due to college revenue sources, I believe. And they come back, have a great year last year. Now they go and win their damn conference. So UAB plays worse than Illinois. It's kind of weird to fathom. You can lose a program 2 years, come back, and then start kicking butt and go 10-3 on the year. One question I heard about proposed by, I forget, some sport media person. And it kind of made me think about, because I love bet on bowl games. I bet on a ton last year. I actually okay decently. But do we have
and
to
I
fear?
And I freaking hate them. And I hate them because you just don't know what the hell you're going to get after 3 weeks, you know? Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, it's
I hate betting.
True.
I hate betting on them. I don't hate them. Sorry, go ahead.
And I'm sure this year is going to kick me in the balls. So last year I hit pretty well. But you do see stuff you never, ever see in a regular season game. But the coach say, hey, I'm at a bowl game. Why not try the triple reverse flea flicker past the overweight lineman? You know, you always see crap you'll never, ever see in a game. Yeah, hell, who cares? But for the premier games that we'll look forward to in the next couple of weeks, my friend, do we have to have the fear again of a laundry list of future NFL players saying, hey, guys, I love you. I'm not playing in the bowl game. From a fan perspective, that does suck because you don't get to see the star player maybe from Auburn, Washington, Ohio State, whatever school is you love to see. But from their perspective, it's become more of a thing where, like, dude, I want to play in this game, but I don't want to jeopardize cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching all my money. More of a trend.
Jalen Smith. That's all you got. A couple of these high-profile freaking tear your ACLs in a big bowl game, and that's all it needed to be. I mean, until they start putting a bank account, a savings account for these guys when they get out and they're paying them, I don't mind. I don't mind if they miss them. Now, if you're in the freaking semi, you know, if you're in the top tier, okay, that's different. But there's a lot of guys, man. Ever since that trend, you've seen it. You've seen it go that way, and I can't. It sucks, but then again, you know, I don't really have a problem with it.
Okay, no, I don't either. I was just wondering, you know, and I think that will be a little more of a trending thing, but you're right. It is your future life of employment with potential to make so much of an investment that, you know, it would be kind of a weird situation as a player to say, you know, yeah, true. Absolutely, yeah. Other sports, you know, you're never going to skip out on a March Madness run, per se. The Friday the 28th, you get Purdue-Auburn at 12:30, Syracuse-West Virginia at 4:15, and Iowa State-Washington State at 8 o'clock. That might, aside from the semifinals, that might be the best day of games. Those are three really damn good games. Obviously, you never know what's going to happen, but wow.
Oh, but on paper, that is
nice. That's really
nice.
And then you wake up the next morning for Florida-Michigan, as you said, which seems to happen every year. It was interesting that I think originally the Bama-Oklahoma game was supposed to be in Texas, but Bama said, we don't want to make this kind of a possible away game venue, so they picked the Orange Bowl. But I believe that game was slated, because when they were doing the prediction show or the revealing show, they said Bama has chosen the Orange Bowl, which makes sense. Obviously, it is a longer drive for Bama to go to California, or no, Orange, but I think that was kind of a smart call, because obviously Bama travels, Chris, probably as good as anyone in the country, but taking it out of Oklahoma's, backyard probably was kind of a bright idea. I'm surprised they said that on the air, but it makes a logical point, and I do kind of like that since them being the one seed, letting them kick. I feel a lot of times, you know, rules from bigger committees kind of screw the teams over. That was a fair rule and probably a smart choice, because if that game happened in my backyard, that crowd is 50-50 minimum, or maybe a little more Oklahoma red than Crimson Alabama red.
There you have it. There you have it. And obviously, this is the moment where, you know, we're sitting at December 3rd, and the first game doesn't even kick in for a little while. So we're usually what we do is we take 2 weeks off, or we take a chunk of time off right here. Now, if there is some, we may next week do a quick show, whether it's Heisman, if there's some, you know, a lot of different moves out of nowhere, some big news, whatever. We could do a show next week, but there is going to be a break because we kind of let the first tier of, you know, the first, whatever, 10 days of the bowl season kind of happen. That way we can come in with some recap as well, and then we'll preview and predict all the most of the big bowl games in general, and of course the national semifinal, and then, you know, after that first wave, well, most of the wave besides the last two games, or the last game I should say, after that's done, we do a post wrap of that stuff, and then of course we preview and predict the national title game. And then after the national title game, we have one more show for college football, and that's obviously recapping the national title game. But if you're in, and we're saying this deep in the podcast, if you're in the college basketball, we call it the college ball show because it's college football to start, then college basketball. So literally, when the national title game's done, and we do the, you know, the show to wrap that up, it's over for college football, but we hit the ground running and go right into college basketball. We take that all the way to the national title in early April, and then we hit the ground running right into the NBA playoffs. So we have a weekly podcast called the NBA Banter. We figure if you like college basketball, it's a pretty good chance that you'll like the NBA playoffs as well, or at least have an interest in it. Then we take that, the NBA stuff, all through the playoffs, all through the draft, and of course free agency is the thing to, you know, when July hits, it's all free agency, and really in June as well. So just keep that in mind. But yeah, we may do a show next week, just a really quick little one, you know, because there are going to be some coaches that get fired and hired, and of course the Heisman and whatnot. Maybe, you never know. There could be a suspension from one of these, you know, national semifinals. That would be big news. You just never know exactly what happens. So, yeah, just a heads up. There's more than likely somewhere, whether it's next week or the week after, there will be a little bit of a 10-day, 14-day break, but then we'll get right back into it just to keep up. With our loyal listeners, and we appreciate them a whole bunch.
Okay, before we leave, can we do a bowl game pick of the year? Because you probably know absolutely nothing about either of these teams.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Get my stuff up here real quick.
I've never heard of this damn thing. The Crampton Bowl? I'm not
well,
sure who the sponsor is.
Brand new.
It's brand new this year, probably. No. It is the Raycom Media Camellia Bowl played at the Crampton Bowl in Montgomery, Alabama, which is known for, I believe, history more than anything of civil rights. It is Georgia Southern, who is 9-3, I believe a triple option team, against Eastern Michigan. Now, this isn't a crappy pick of the week because they're 9-3 versus 7-5. I think the Georgia Southern's 9 wins is better than all the teams we put together for our crappy pick of the year segment. But it is a 1-point spread. Eastern Michigan's favored by 1. They are a MAC school against the Georgia Southern, I believe they're the Warhawks, Eagles. Okay, what do we got for the Raycom Media.
So where the hell
Media
is
Bowl.
The Crampton Bowl then? What city is that in? Alabama. Okay.
Now,
Georgia
Montgomery,
Southern's
Alabama.
From Alabama, isn't it? Oh, no,
Georgia Southern be
that's
in
right
Georgia?
There. No, yeah. I just listened to myself say that. Georgia, Alabama.
Yeah.
So they are closer. Okay. So they're probably going to have,
they
and they're having a better closer. Season, too.
Yep,
okay.
Very true.
Interesting. Let's see here. So, this couldn't have just waited, huh? Let me see here. I got to get my damn shit open. Okay, there. Okay. I finally found the damn thing. I went under the different section for Bulls, and it just sent me to the matchup, but I couldn't really, you know, read the stats. Yeah, this is
sure.
a good game.
Yeah.
This is obviously the yards passing at 82 seems like, whoa, what the hell? But like you said, they're an option team, so 260. I'm going Georgia Southern.
Okay. All right.
That's who I got there.
I might blend them with you. Because if you bet bowl games, as Chris said, it is 51% skill is a better, 49% pray to God what does happen happens to go your way.
Yeah, exactly.
You see shit you'll never see before.
Which tells you right there, don't freaking bet on bowls. See how he just broke that down?
Yeah.
If almost half your bet, it comes down to sheer luck, yeah, then you got a problem. You can't Sunday night go, if I just get these seven things to work, it's going to pay for my whole Vegas trip. That's not how this stuff works. That's how Vegas gets it. Because I know several, including you, I know several of my friends throughout the years, if this seven parlay thing just works, it'll be like I never went to Vegas. I've heard that about 15 times, and not just from you, Marshall. I know that you're one of them. You said that once to me. I've heard it plenty of times from a lot of people.
Oh, and I'm smiling ear to ear because it's true, and you can only just laugh because you have your horror flashbacks. But on that note, we'll get out of here. If you do bet on a bowl game, please call in because I'm sure your story is going to be incredible. I'll have a couple of stories. If you need a therapy hotline, call in. We'll listen, and I'll probably have a couple of stories every year. I always like, Chris, I got three stories, man. Let me start the show. And he's like, Jesus Christ, what'd you do now? So we'll have one of those episodes coming on. I promise you we will. And, yeah, that'll wrap it up. But we do have a good Final Four matchup coming up. As I said, despite some debate, I do think this will be a very fun Final Four to see. It's a shame we couldn't have seen the Bama Oklahoma last year with Baker. That would have been really something, but oh well. Chris and I will be back again, like you said, maybe next week, or if not, very shortly after, as we break down all the bowls and wrap up what's been a very enjoyable college football season, and the bowl seasons normally never, ever disappoints you. You can find some type of angle to enjoy. So enjoy the holiday time of the year. Hopefully where you're listening, it's not snowing, but I know that's probably half and half for our podcast listeners. So have a nice day. Enjoy the week with your family. Get your Christmas shopping done. The boys are out. Have a good night. Peace.